This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Franchise Hockey Manager 3, coming in October of 2016, officially licensed by the NHL, the first PC game to be officially licensed by the NHL in almost a decade. It is the next generation of hockey strategy for Mac and PC. Just $29.99 today. If you pre-order, you get $10 off that price. It's $29.99. Pre-order today, and you can get access to the early beta on October 17th. Franchise Hockey Manager 3 is the deepest, most authentic hockey strategy experience you can find, including for the first time ever. As I said, it is officially licensed by the NHL. It's got an all-new mode called Path to Glory that gets you in the game and having fun quickly with all sorts of streamlined features and goals. You can take the reins of your favorite NHL franchise to capture the Stanley Cup Championship. You can go back in time as well as play in current days. You can play in international leagues as well. Not just international leagues, but even as the international teams and international tournaments. It's got tons of new features, like an all-new tactic system, some scouting systems that are fantastic. There's so much more happening in Franchise Hockey Manager 3, as I mentioned, officially licensed by the NHL. If you pre-order it today, you get $10 off. It'll cost you just $29.99. You get access to the early beta. And man, we are so excited about Franchise Hockey Manager 3. Just go to ootpdevelopments.com. and look for Franchise Hockey Manager. Pre-order it today on your Mac or your PC. Get 10 bucks off.
So the majority of sports games for 2016 have released, but there's still some interesting developments to cover for the genre. In particular, the influence it'll have on new hardware. There's the PlayStation VR, which just came out, the PlayStation 4 Pro, which will be out in November, plus the future Xbox One upgrade, that'll be late next year, and finally, the just-announced Nintendo Switch, which will arrive March 2017. Sports games are critical to the success of gaming systems, and Nintendo, for example, knows this all too well after having been abandoned by third parties like EA and 2K for many years now, going through the entire life cycle with the Wii U and much of the time with the Wii without them. Additionally, they're often showcased for the purpose of showing off new technology. So what role will sports games play in the years ahead for this new hardware? Thanks for tuning in to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedye, Pasta Padre, and with me is Mr. Rich Grisham. Rich, how you been doing lately?
Doing fantastic, Brian. I'm always happy to talk to you about sports video games. I'm excited.
That's what we do.
That's what we do.
That's what we do. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that we do have all this hardware news. And we have one that just released, we have one that's about to, and we have one that's a little farther off. But, you know, sports games tie into these things. I mean, Nintendo Switch, let's start with that. That console was announced, as we're recording, it was announced just a matter of hours ago. And this is a kind of home console, but a hybrid portable system that you can dock and play on your TV, or undock and take with you and play on the go. And in the trailer, we don't know a whole lot of details about it besides what was shown in the trailer. But in the trailer, one of the games that was showcased was NBA 2K17. And I thought that was notable for a few reasons. And one of that being, yeah, there's a third party. And another being, there's a sports game, which the Wii U had none of. And so in order to capture kind of a more mainstream audience, other than just Nintendo fans who buy only Nintendo published games, they need to attract people like sports fans. So I thought that was an interesting slip in there of one of those games. What was your initial reaction to this Nintendo Switch, Rich?
I love it. I love everything about it. I am a Nintendo fan, and not sort of the traditional Nintendo fan, meaning I'm not somebody who grew up with Nintendo and it defined so much of my initial gaming. I mean, it was certainly a part of it, but the, you know, other systems like the, you know, the Atari 2600, and of course this, you know, shows my age a little bit, but that was really my first
for me, Rich, it was the ColecoVision.
Okay, so yeah, I had eventually an Atari 2600, not when it was first out and popular, but after the crash, but yeah. I didn't know or care. I was a little kid, right? I didn't know any of that was happening around me. I had zero awareness. I had an NES, and I had RBI Baseball, right? I mean, that's what everybody had on the NES. And of course, I had, Tecmo Bowl and Tecmo Super Bowl and probably all the other big sports games back then, but those were more influential to me than, Mario, although I love Mario, who doesn't, right? And certainly more influential to me than Zelda, I played very little of when I was a kid.
Wow, yeah, Zelda was mine. I got hooked on Zelda, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and not to say I shouldn't have. I mean, it was only because we were, basically not poor, but video games as they are now were back then a very expensive proposition.
Oh, a luxury. Certainly. I mean, if you look at game prices, they charge some games I remember my parents buying for me were $100 for a game. Right. And that was back when you consider inflation, that'd be selling a game now for, I don't know what, $180 or something.
Yeah. A couple hundred bucks for sure.
Yeah. Totally. So,
but I love Nintendo. I appreciated them and liked them. But when my son was born and I started to share gaming with him, I really fell in love with Nintendo because the platform is so great for and welcoming to people who like video games of every age. I feel very comfortable with my son playing Nintendo as a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old.
Sure.
I know that there's going to be a lot of good games. And when I say not a lot of games, I mean a lot of good games. Shovelware, bad games, like really beautifully designed games by Nintendo made with care that are on it. And I really, really came to appreciate that. So, long preamble, I love Nintendo. I am really excited about this platform. There's so much to like. There's so much to unpack. And the icing on the cake was seeing, as you said, NBA 2K featured prominently. Not, a quick 2-second smash cut, but that was part of the initial messaging. So as somebody who loves Nintendo, loves sports games, and we haven't had a portable basketball game for a long time, not really since the ESP, right? Because, basketball never was on the DS or the 3DS and Vita was never the Vita.
Nope,
never a Vita. Now, there was plenty of other great sports games on the Vita. So, that's a long, rambling way of saying, for me, everything about this announcement, top to bottom, from a video game standpoint in general, from a sports video game standpoint, and just watching the different ways that you'll be able to use that, it's so great to see that portable gaming will not only continue, because we all know the Vita isn't going to have a successor, and it's been a long time since Nintendo has had something out of the straight-up DS family. So I'm incredibly excited and happy about everything with this thing, 100%.
Yeah, and in my evaluation of it was, not everything about it speaks to me. That's probably just because I'm home 80%, 90% of the time, so I don't really need the portable features of it as much as maybe some other people would. It's like there's like the battle between are you going to carry another device, right? You got your phone, you got your...
I thought it was... Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted. I thought it was interesting how this is clearly bigger than a phone, and I love that.
Yeah,
I love
it. Yeah, it's not replacing it, but it does become a situation, just like with the Vita, where you have to think about, do I want to bring it with me, right, instead of just taking it with you whenever you go anywhere. So
correct. So that's really never going to change, though, right? Like we're always now going to always be carrying our phone. So anything that they do would have to be a second device. You know what I mean? Like Nintendo would never produce anything that would replace the phone. And, I think there's a lot of people that are like you, Brian, who don't really care, want, or desire a portable gaming platform.
Right.
But there's a lot of people that are like me who are constantly going places and doing things. And I pretty much have a bag with me anyway with my computer, right? When I go traveling for work or for business or anything, or even when I go anywhere, I always got to bring my stuff with me because I'm always working. So, you know, there's both. And what again, we're talking what could be here. What could be amazing is that we could both have this thing and use it very differently and both be very delighted with it. And that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, and the flexibility, I think that's what you're not going to see a PlayStation Vita again. You know, you're not going to see a dedicated, maybe Nintendo still does that because they have that crowd for it. But as far as reaching a more like technological crowd, that's that the Vita did with, you know, higher specs, works with your PS4, you know, any number of your PS3. Any number of different ways to tap into the latest technology and use the same games, things like that, you're probably not going to see. But yeah, I think it's intriguing for a couple reasons. I mean, I would love to see Nintendo kind of get back into the mix here. You know, the more options we have, the better. Like you said, Nintendo produces a different type of game, a different type of system, which can lead to different types of games that you don't necessarily get. We lament all the time, Rich, when we watch those E3 press conferences where we're like, oh, there's another first-person shooter, there's another war recreation, you know,
yep,
like, there's another brutal, just like massacre
killing.
Yeah
exactly.
Which, you know, it's fine that those games are out there, but we often just don't see much of the others anymore, unless, like, there's a few here and there, but Nintendo is very heavy on those type of games, kind of experience games and games that can resonate with a wider range of ages and interests. Yep. But I guess that brings me to sports games specifically, because Nintendo has not been the place for sports games in the last decade plus. You know, it hasn't, going back to the, you know, as long as I can remember, really. So
The last sports game that was Nintendo, you know, that was memorable for Nintendo was Wii Sports, right? And, you know, that's not a sports game that we consider, right?
Not a league license, like, type of sports games. I mean, you'd have to go back to, what, the Nintendo 64?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I never even had a 64. I had a Super Nintendo, and there were some great sports games on that thing.
GameCube had some, but at the time, you know, GameCube wasn't really all that popular. So, but as far as, like, driving that group of consumers towards Nintendo, that has not been the case for as long as I can remember. So we look at, you know, the initial success of the Wii and then it dying off, and then the pretty much Wii U having no support from the beginning from third parties. And you look at it and you say, you know, people will criticize sports games for, you know, it's too similar every year. You know, it's a roster update, whatever. But that, not only do those games sell consistently, but they're where people go. What systems are they on? That's where people go, where the sports games are, and it's historically that's been true. And you look at, you know, what's a system seller for a lot of people? MLB The Show is a system seller, or, you know, you have EA Access on Xbox One where you can get sample really all the sports games from EA. So I guess the question is, would you consider buying a game like NBA 2K or Madden on this Nintendo Switch versus getting it on the other one? Of course, we don't know all the details. We don't know how the online infrastructure is going to work, whether, you know, we would have our online leagues, whether you can play online on the go, who knows? We don't know that kind of stuff. We don't know price. None of this stuff has been announced by Nintendo. They're not going to do it until early next year. But do you foresee, like, a scenario where you would get the games on the Nintendo Switch versus the other ones?
Totally. If there is a good sports game experience on the Nintendo Switch.
So are you looking for a different type of experience?
No. Well, here's what I think, right? This does not appear to be a gimmick-based system with controls or motion controls or a tablet input. This appears to be a modern, traditional video game console, even all the way down to the fact that you've got carts, you know, which they showed plugging in the cart. Like, this is a ultra modern slash retro console kind of all together at once. And what's great about that is it is a single platform to develop for, unlike developing for the Wii U and the DS or, you know, any combination. It's a single system. It will be, I presume, to be somewhat power competitive to PlayStation 4 or Xbox One,
It might not be 4K, but
But that's fine, right? So with that, we know if you've got a single platform to develop for, and you could probably port a lot of your existing infrastructure, I think that gives us all the best chance to get it because there won't be a competitor, right? They're not doing something for anybody else. Uh-huh. It's a much more standard development process because you're not trying to force feed in weird controls or anything like that. You know, you can, you know, because you've got regular controller options, you know, you can, it can be very much that. So I would totally get it because then I could be playing it on the plane, on the, you know, in the hotel or at home, or on the train, or all of the different places where I could potentially do it. And instead of having like saving it to the cloud from the Vita to the PlayStation, it's just the system that I play. There's a lot of reasons why sports games can be very successful. There will be a single platform. It will be relatively similar in power to systems and games they've already developed. And it's not a dramatic difference from the, or it doesn't have to be, right? A dramatic difference, if at all, from the same versions for the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Yeah, here's the challenge, really, I think, is that people are largely entrenched in where they're buying games right now as far as third parties go. PS4 or Xbox One. So Nintendo comes in, and I think what people look for out of, like, what they'll look for out of this system is ways to best utilize. Not necessarily say, well, I'm going to get NBA 2K over there because then I can play it portably. I'm not sure if that's really going to happen. I think they're going to look for the games that were specifically designed for Nintendo, for the Switch, at least at first. Because it's hard. It, you know, I would have a difficult time switching over, especially with, you know, you have your friends on certain consoles already. There's obviously tens of millions more people with the Xbox One and PS4, then we'll have a Nintendo Switch. So you're talking about online population and all sorts of things like that. And already Nintendo isn't really known for their online. So how well is an Ultimate Team going to do?
Well,
you know, over there,
you're making great points. I guess the one thing that I would question or challenge is, why do you have to switch? Why can't you have
both? No pun
both?
Intended, Rich.
no pun intended.
Right.
You know, but why do you have to? Well, if I'm getting it on the Nintendo Switch, I just automatically can't have it on any other platform.
Well, most people aren't going to buy the same game twice.
But it might not be the same. But is it the same game? Well, that's my question. You know, like when I got the Vita, I got FIFA, and I also got that year's FIFA on the console because it was a different thing. I was playing my, you know, portable. I'd taken it with me, you know, sort of offline world. And I was using the regular PlayStation 4 version to do, you know, some different things. So I don't necessarily need the Nintendo Switch to have online leagues and Ultimate Team. I mean, obviously, Ultimate Team, you got to believe, is going to be a part of anything because that's so critical to how, you know, these games make revenue. But I think you could have both, assuming, of course, purchasing power, right? Like that's an assumption. Like, video games are expensive. You know, if you're somebody who's going to be able to go out and get the Nintendo Switch day one, then chances are you could probably, you're in the, you know, you're blessed enough to be in the economic situation where you can do that, right? So again, if you're counting your dollars and pennies, it's really hard, but you're probably not getting a Nintendo Switch anyway. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take just a moment here to thank our sponsors for this week, the DollarShaveClub.com. We ask you to support DollarShaveClub.com because that not only gives you a great shave, which we'll talk about in a second, but it also really helps the Press Row podcast keep going. You know, guys, you don't need to choose between price and quality to get an amazing and affordable shave. DollarShaveClub.com is the answer. And to prove how amazing their shave really is, right now they're going to give you your first month free to join the club. You know, DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors right to my door for a third of the price of what the greedy razor corporations charge. You can join the club like I did and stop dealing with the drugstore hassle and battle the locked-up razor fortress ever again. Just go to Dollar Shave Club and pick a razor from their lineup of amazing blades. I personally use the Executive Blade with their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter. The blade just gently glides for the smoothest shave ever, and it is a great shave. I am hooked. I use the Dollar Shave DollarShaveClub.com's Executive Blade. It's fantastic, and that shave butter. They're both really good. These are legit products that I use every day now. So see why over 3 million members like me love Dollar Shave Club. They're so confident in the quality of all their products. Now you can get your first month of the club for free. Just pay shipping. After that, it's just a few bucks a month. No long-term commitment. No hidden fees. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/PressRow. That's DollarShaveClub.com/PressRow. Get a great product, a great shave, and support the Press Row podcast.
I look at it and I think, you know, how is the experience going to differ between your big screen and the little screen, right? So, like, I do not like traditional sports games on my phone, okay? You can't play
because of the control.
It's not necessarily the controls, though, too. Just being on a small screen.
Agreed.
If you're packing that many players on a small screen, like, how are you going to be able to run an offense as efficiently on with NBA 2K on the small screen as you are on the big screen? I don't know.
FIFA was great, but it was the right size and it was the right shape. Basketball is tougher for sure.
Yeah,
football could be tough.
So that makes me wonder if the games are going to be designed any differently, because you have to take into consideration how it's played on both, you know, both manners of play. So I think that'll be an interesting challenge for some of these games. There are obviously, I think baseball would work naturally there. You know, golf.
Yeah, but they won't have a baseball game. That's the thing.
Well, they could have
a baseball game.
They could have a Mario baseball, you know, those type of.
But there's not a. There will not be a licensed baseball game on it, because Sony.
Well, they could. They're not going to do it, but yeah, they could.
Right.
Technically.
Sony's the only ones who can do it. Technically, Nintendo could, but there's no way that they would create an entire.
Well, that would be an interesting move, wouldn't it? If they wanted to capture sports gamers.
Yeah, I say there's no way. Of course, there's a way. If they wanted to invest,
they
probably
would have the money.
$7 to $10 million before they ever saw $1, and then that doesn't even count licensing. Like, it's a massive investment of time and money to create.
Which is why they would probably use their own characters for, you know, a Mario baseball type of game.
I would too. Yeah. I would too.
But there's potential there. I mean, it's a difficult thing to envision exactly how it's all going to work, because we don't know. I mean, we obviously see the portable nature of it, that you can slide the controller, the sides of your portable part off and use them as controllers. But you can also get your normal, like, just standard controller to use with it.
Yep.
Which is, you know, necessary.
And awesome.
Yeah. So I also question playing a sports game with those smaller controllers off the side, like I saw them doing. I'm like, I can't picture myself playing in that way, the way that they were in the trailer. Like, okay.
I could if they were attached. The disattached from the mobile version, I can't see.
Yeah.
But if it's attached, where you have that sort of feel, because that's how you play the PSP, right, or the Vita. I mean, it's just like that. So, but the disattached in a mobile setting, that would be pretty tough.
Yeah, and then again, it goes back to a lot of the online structure for the, like, they were playing basically in the trailer right up next to each other. I don't know if they had to connect their devices or not together, but or whether they were playing over their data connection or Wi-Fi or what. But, like, to me, what would be appealing would be, hey, you got Madden Ultimate Team. I'm going to knock out some solo challenges.
Absolutely.
That, like, rather than playing my franchise mode game on the portable screen, knocking out, like, solo challenges and stuff like that seems more of a efficient way to use it, and an enjoyable way to use it, where, again, it's like a shorter experience. Just like with mobile, where I don't want to play a full, like, 60-minute game on a mobile device. I probably don't want to play a 60-minute game on the Switch when I'm on the road. So I mean, that's great when you're in the plane and stuff, Rich, but I usually don't have that chunk of time when I'm not home.
Yep.
So, but there's a lot of unique ways they can certainly go about it. And I guess, yeah, it just comes back to, are they going to design these games any differently for the system, or are they just porting it over?
I hope not, because they designed games differently for the Wii U and they all came out at launch and then we never saw another one. Right.
Yeah.
And I played NBA 2K at launch on the Wii U. I reviewed it. It had real issues, frame rate issues. It was hard to play the game. And there were the Madden game was fine, but there was nothing, you know, they had to force feed, you know, drawing plays into it, I think. You know, it's just, I hope it's not designed differently, because to me that gives it the best chance to not only launch, but then if a good game launches and the system is popular, then there's a chance that they could do a second and a third and get into the same cadence they have with the early releases on the existing consoles. We all should want, not artificially, but like genuinely, we should all want sports games to be a big success on the Nintendo platform. That's just good for everybody.
Well, we definitely want to expand the number of games available.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff. You cover it every day on Pasta Pottery. There's a lot of interesting indie sports experiences, too, that, you know, could, and I imagine some will show up on the Switch as well. So it's not just the traditional licensed sports games, but that's exciting because, again, this is a powerful device that can be played multiple ways. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's that's something else that is, again, makes it more appealing to me for that reason.
So one other thing to look at with the Nintendo Switch is the release date, because the system is going to be coming out in March. That is not really a great time for sports games other than baseball, which, as we mentioned, it probably won't have a licensed baseball game. So it's not going to be, it might launch with like an NBA 2K17 or something, but
that would make sense.
That late in the cycle, you know, that's not going to be a really touted.
No, it could help. It could help. I think NBA 2K, if there's any sports game I would want to launch a system with, it would be that.
But it is.
Well, I don't care when it is, right? You're launching it. You only get to launch once. And March is still a couple of months before the NBA playoffs heat up. You know, the NBA is very much in the discussion and current in March. So, you know, the NFL, I can't imagine there'll be a launch Madden or a launch.
Wouldn't think so.
Anything else.
No.
From a major sports perspective because of that time frame. But to me, the NBA makes sense. Plus, again, it's the most popular game that's not named FIFA as far as sales, and it is at the top of the sports power rankings, which you can go check out on Hit the Pass on the Sporting News. So, I mean, I would absolutely, if there's anybody I'd partner with, it'd be NBA. That makes it more appealing, right? Having NBA 2K makes the Nintendo Switch more appealing. There's just no doubt about that. How much more? You know, 10,000 more, you know, units, 2 million more units? I mean, who knows? But it certainly gives it a extra little notch that is exciting to a whole lot of people.
I would say that, you know, the presence of an NBA 2K or a Madden or whatever legitimizes the console at launch, as opposed to the Wii U, which had none of that at launch. So I think it's important in that sense. I'm just, you know, and NBA 2K does sells well through June, but the vast majority of people will have already bought the same game on a different system. So I'm not sure if that's going
right.
to push sales, but what I'm looking for then, because it is that time of the year where you're not going to have a brand new sports game that's just launching, is Nintendo going to do their own type of sports game, just like we said with a Mario Baseball or whatever, whether that's a standalone or as like in the Wii where they packed in Wii Sports, and you know, Nintendo knows how much like a sports experience can do for them or how much it can hurt them not to have it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have something.
Good point.
Sure. For release. I can totally see that happening. It just, they have to kind of do that because they're not going to be able to rely on, other than an NBA 2K, third parties to kind of deliver that sports experience at first.
There's no doubt. Other than the Mario sports games, their Nintendo doesn't have them. So that's 100% on point.
Mario Kart did win sports game of the year
and
not Mario Kart, not from us, but from a
right
from a game award show. Yeah.
And Mario Kart is a amazing.
Oh yeah.
Amazing game. Yeah. And I got to believe that'll be available at launch. And, you know, if you haven't played Mario Kart, and there's plenty of people who have and plenty of people who have not, it may look like a little kid's racer, but it is far from it. That is deep and exciting and as good as any racing game.
So I guess one final thing on the Switch, and that comes to kind of consumer trust, Rich. If you're a sports gamer, do you trust in buying into Nintendo with the vision that you are going to get consistent sports games over the years and you're not going to be abandoned like in the past? And that's difficult, especially if you are talking about people who are making a decision between one or another console, and maybe because Nintendo's kind of coming in the middle of a generation here, that's not as much of a concern as opposed to launching against other systems. But I'm just curious if you think, you know, like if you would put that trust in a Nintendo after their last two systems kind of failed people in that regard.
Well, no, I don't. But that I don't feel that that's an expectation that is being set by Nintendo either. Mm-hmm. I think they're saying as clearly as they can without saying it, hey, look, this is our new system and NBA 2K is a part of it. And when it comes out, you're going to be able to play it. And this is one of the ways that you're going to be able to play it. And I have no expectation. I don't feel like I'm buying into any promise because no promise is being made. Like anything else, publishers are going to make games that they can have success with. And success equals, you know, making a return on their investment and then continuing to invest in it to make it better. And if the system sells well and the things that I believe will come together to make it an attractive platform is, you know, that it is an attractive platform. It is relatively current with its technology set. And there's a lot of existing code to leverage. If those things come together, then the big sports game makers will keep producing it.
Yeah,
but I don't have faith. But they're not telling me I should. And recent history shows that sports games aren't part of the Nintendo experience. If it's going to happen, this is when it's going to happen. But if it doesn't, I'm okay with that because I've already got more spectacular sports experiences than I can handle anyway on the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. I'm sure there will be tons of other great stuff to do, even if sports games aren't a part of them. But I really, really hope that sports games are an integral part because that just means the system is successful. And a successful Nintendo is a world that I'd rather be in than an unsuccessful
one. Yeah. And I wouldn't count on it either. But if this becomes development-wise, something that they can do alongside the games that they're producing for PS4 and Xbox One, and that, you know, it doesn't take necessarily a whole lot of extra resources to put together the game, because the reason why we lost those sports games wasn't just because people don't buy third-party games on Nintendo platforms. It was also because, well, sorry, EA and 2K and whoever else, if you're going to make a sports game, you have to design a sports game specifically for our system because of our motion controls or because of our tablet controller. You have to design differently for us. Now, if they can come in and produce these games without having to do that, you know, there'd be very little reason for them not to put games
Bingo.
Out. So
that's right.
So that's just something we have to watch, because if we find out, you know, like the architecture of the systems or the online configurations or whatever it might be, it differs greatly from PS4 and Xbox One, then maybe you get concerned. If it's like if they talk about how easy it is to develop for, how you can have parity with the PS4 and Xbox One, essentially feature wise, because you may not get it graphically, but feature wise. Then I think that's something you can almost rely on happening. But I can certainly understand anybody who's a little unsure at the start. But you know, I think it was a good reveal for Nintendo, because like you said, they didn't really overpromise. They just showed it, right? They just showed kind of the capabilities, and let you decide at this point.
Wonderfully.
I'm
sorry. I keep interrupting.
Go, Rich.
Wonderfully understated. It was great.
After they put kind of a creepy image on Twitter of Mario peeking behind a curtain. Which is like,
was that creepy? I did not find that creepy.
It was creepy, Rich. It was like he was in a dressing room. He pulled the curtain back without consent. I mean, we are in the midst of this presidential election, Rich. You need consent to do what Mario did. Sorry. So let's briefly talk about the other two things, and they're PS4 related. PlayStation VR, it's out. It's been out for about a week or so. And, you know, I've not played it. I really have practically zero interest in it for a number of reasons, most of which health-wise, I don't think it would be good for me. But I have watched streams, and I've watched videos and read some reviews. And, you know, I've read enough to know, well, if that makes all these people sick, I would not play Drive Club, things like that. But, you know, there is potential here, not necessarily for you're going to play Madden in VR or whatever. There's potential here for unique type of experiences, which we were just saying that maybe we don't necessarily want on the new Nintendo system. But you could have in this extra device that you have to pay essentially $500 for. And we don't have a licensed sports game at all really tied into the PSVR at this point. But there are sort of sports experiences. There's one called Headmaster where you're heading a soccer ball and trying to hit targets, essentially. There's Rigs, which is a mechanized, like almost like a sports-themed game in mechs. And then there's Drive Club, like I said. There's a sports bar game. But, you know, we have talked about, Rich, our lack of interest in it, essentially, and our skepticism that it's going to be successful. I'm curious what you think of it now that it's been out for a brief period of time and people have been talking about it and playing it.
Yeah, there's a lot to potentially discuss here. So I don't even know where to start. I do not have PSVR, nor do I have any VR. I don't have a computer that is remotely powerful enough to run the Vive or the Oculus, even if I did want them. I've had numerous people that I know and, you know, respect their opinions on video games, tell me how much they have enjoyed their PSVR experience. You know, we know that even if there aren't a lot of sports games available specifically, you can experience your games using like theater mode, which I know, for example, Keith has been talking about on your site in the comments regularly. So there's cool things that you can do with, evidently, I haven't done it myself, but there and a couple other people told me similar kinds of things. There's cool things that you can do with the PSVR, playing in things like called theater mode with different camera angles and stuff. So even, you know, even with that, there's a lot of reasons why I don't have PlayStation VR. Although I will say I haven't walked by one in the world, and I can't guarantee you that if I walked by one that I wouldn't get it. I'm not saying I would, but like I can't tell you flat out, Brian, if I walked through a Target and I saw, and you know, they might be out there, I just, you know, haven't gone to one. If I'm walking through a Target or walking through, you know, someplace, you know, an airport, you know, if I'm in my hometown and heading home, that I wouldn't get it. However, I doubt I will. And I doubt I will for many reasons. Number one, there's the time issue. I already only have a few hours a week that I get to play sports video games or any video games. You know, so to spend the money that it would take to be able to use it so little and then also take away from my traditional game time, that's just an equation that doesn't work for me right now. There's other reasons too, just like the setup, you know, the you got like a five or six cables and all sorts of stuff getting plugged in different places. You know, the fact that I'd be wearing this giant thing on my head, you know,
my wife center does not need any more wires.
Exactly. So that's not really a deterrent. It's just I hear people talk about it and it certainly, you know, doesn't it doesn't make me want to go out and get it anymore. So, but it's really mostly about, well, if I really wanted to, I could find the $500. There's just so much to it, and I would have so little time to enjoy it. And there's no killer app. I mean, if there was some experience that everybody in the world was like, no, this is the thing, this is the thing, that might spur me on. It just, you know, from what I've read, and I've certainly read and talked to a lot, like I'm very well versed on VR, even if I haven't played it on PlayStation. There's just a lot of half-baked ideas and quarter experiences, and I don't have a problem with that per se, right? I'm not saying that's bad or evil. It's just that's not something that I feel like wading into yet, but it could change.
Right. It might get there. I personally, I would look at like second generation hardware or something for this, as opposed to, it's kind of experimental at this point, and you don't have really the support and software, because they're only going to have a limited number of people who own these things, who are buying these games, and the games are kind of overpriced from what I've seen.
Well, they kind of have to be, because these companies making these games are risking a lot. I mean, video games are already incredibly risky, you know, as a studio. I mean, my gosh, studios get shut down constantly, you know, like it's just a risky overall business to be in, even in the, you know, more established spaces. It's a huge risk for a company to make VR experiences. I mean, the amount of resources and time and money you have to pour into this, you know, I'm not saying it's justified. I'm just saying I get it, because this might be their only chance to recoup their investment.
And that's the catch 22 though, is they have to that's such a huge investment for them. But how many games are going to sell to people who just spent $500 on top of already bought, you know, having bought a PS4 in the past? You know, like, well, spending, then you're talking about $600 to add in one game when you got tax.
Right.
You know, like, it's,
but why would you spend $500 on a VR unit and not buy some games to go along with it? I mean, the attach rate still got to be high. I mean, but it is a catch 22, but that's what I say. Like, if you're somebody who's in the market for a PSVR, you're already talking $400 or $500. Like, you've got money, so you really got to add probably $100 to $200 more on top of that for exactly what you're talking about. But that's an Oculus and a Vive are the same thing. You know, you got to have a really powerful computer.
Yeah,
right.
Worse.
That's my point. Like, you know, VR is an expensive proposition. It's more expensive than traditional video gaming, which is already expensive.
Right. And it's a limited kind of experience at this point. I think I'm going to want to try it at some point. Like the first time it makes me sick. I'm not sure if I'll go back to it. That's the biggest issue for me. It's like there's one, you know, I don't drink, and it's mostly because I don't want to get sick. I hate that feeling more than anything. I deal with vertigo already, so I deal with that feeling. I don't want to give it to myself. Nope. So that's my biggest concern with it. You know, I read the reviews, and it seems like the games are hit or miss on motion sickness. Like, it'll happen for some with one game, it won't happen for others, and just randomly it'll happen for someone with another game.
So Drive Club was like the biggest defender, I think. Games Radar couldn't even get someone to do it because it made all of their guys sick.
Yeah, I think they gave it like a 2 out of 10 because of that.
Ouch.
So like, that's the other thing is, this device is cheaper than the Oculus and the Vive, but it's got a lower frame rates, lower resolution, which probably contributes even more to that. So that's, you know, that's just kind of the trade-off you're getting there. And it's just a concern for me, especially. There's just not really anything compelling games either. Like, if I bought it, I'd be like, okay, this was, let's say I enjoyed it, this was cool. I'm not sure I'd be going back to it very often. So
yeah, it's a novelty, right? It's an expensive novelty. It's certainly not something and who knows, right? I say these things like they're true. They're just my opinion. But I can't imagine somebody playing a couple, 2 or 3 hours a day every day in their VR. Like,
I see those guys on the streams and they take the headset off and they just look completely out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like disheveled and like,
of course,
like they're pale and.
Yeah,
just like, wow, that it's like it really takes something out of you, like physically and emotionally or something, based on what I've seen. So that's, you know, yeah, it's probably not, you're not going to marathon a game in that necessarily.
Right.
And you know,
So the short experiences are a blessing, you know, from that regard. Hey, you know, it's an early adopter, cool tech. Hey, everybody, check this thing out. Yeah. Kind of a situation. It's totally cool.
That's what I would want it for. Is like, hey, look what I got. Check this out. You know, like, and then, you know, one day maybe it'll be more, have more purpose.
Of course it will. This is the beginning. It will be better in version 2, version 3, version 4. It just speaks to who we are, not one way or the other, just who we are. I mean, I am very excited, and I'm day one on the Nintendo Switch. And I am, you know, if I see it in a store, I might buy it. But, you know, situation home, at best with the VR.
If you go PSV. Home with that, you're going to get ridiculed on Twitter.
No, they won't know. Come on. My wife doesn't know what's going on with video games. My son will know. He'll be like, oh, what's that? And I'm not sure that he's 9. I'm not sure that I want him doing the whole VR thing yet either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I wonder, like, visually how that affects
it can't be good. Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying is there's no way it can be good.
Yeah. So one other thing, Rich, PS4 Pro is out on November 10th. We talked about this just for a moment in one of our earlier shows.
Yeah.
And since then, we know a couple of the games that are going to be enhanced for the PS4 Pro that are going to get 4K capabilities, native 4K, I believe, on both of them. That's NBA 2K17 and Pro Evolution Soccer 2017. So in order to take advantage of this, you've got to have the new PS4 Pro system. You've got to have a 4K TV, which, you know, they're starting to be adopted a little more now, but still it's a kind of a rarity out there. Have your thoughts on PS4 Pro changed at all since we first talked about it?
Well, I like it. I like the fact that it exists. I don't have any reason to have one at this moment. That could change any time. If my PlayStation 4 breaks and the PS4 Pro is out, chances are I'll get it just because, although I've heard it's ugly. So
it looks like a triple tiered, you know, like your PS4 has two tiers, right?
Right.
It like adds a third layer.
But I mean, I don't really care. It's in my entertainment center, in my office, right? So if my PS4 breaks, I get that. Or if I go get a 4K TV, my next TV will be a 4K, not because like I care about 4K. I don't, but because
at this point,
exactly.
You can get
right.
Good deals on them. Yeah.
Bingo. Right. So when I do get a new TV, it'll be a 4K. And if that TV, is situated where I would get a PlayStation 4 for like downstairs or in a basement or something, that's another situation where I would get it. So I will either have a need because, you know, God forbid something happens to my launch day PlayStation 4, or at some point I'll get it. But either way, I'm glad it exists. I'm a fan of these multiple versions of these machines. I like the fact that I can get a lower priced one, and I like the fact that I can get a higher priced one, and that essentially they're the same. One is just, you know, the souped up version. I like that. It seems to be everyone else seems to hate it, but I really like that as a consumer, and just as somebody who loves video games.
Yeah, it's interesting kind of how it's being approached, because there is an excitement for it because there's nothing, it doesn't do anything really thrilling other than make your games look a little better, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're really into that thing, it's a cool thing. And if you're like me, I couldn't tell you the difference between any of those numbers and figures. I still don't know what HDR is other than more colors. It means nothing to me, but you know, a lot of people do really get into that kind of thing, and it's for them, clearly.
And that's part of the good thing about it, though, is like I said, it doesn't get me excited in any way, but at the same time, then it doesn't make me feel like I'm compelled to have to buy it, right? If they were flipping generations on us already, I would be perturbed by that, but I'd still go out and buy it, but I'd be annoyed.
What are we,
3 years? I'd be annoyed by that. That they'd be already moving forward on that. But like you said, to me, it's like the PS4 Pro looks like, if you don't have a PS4 yet, it makes sense to get that. If yours breaks or whatever, you need an extra one, get that one, right? But there's no reason necessarily to feel like you have to upgrade at this point. And I think, like I said, that's disappointing in a sense, because you're like, I wonder if they could have done something more, like Xbox is doing something more next year. But that's next year, right?
Like, is the Xbox One S doing gangbusters right now? Hasn't it helped, like, Xbox win the hardware.
Xbox has been winning even before that.
Right. But I mean, it seems to be adding momentum.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, that's going to help at this holiday season too.
And same thing, right? If my Xbox One, my launch day Xbox One, which I hope it doesn't, because I love my Xbox One. I love them both. If it breaks, I'm going to go get myself an Xbox One S, you know, right away. Now, I don't know if that's my only option anymore, or they have multiple versions of the Xbox.
What, do they have a slim Xbox now?
Okay.
Or is that the PS? I don't know. I'm so confused now. I forget which one.
It is confusing. We're in the business.
Which one has the slim? I think Xbox has a slim and the Xbox One S now. They replaced the normal Xbox with the slim. And then
doesn't PS4 have a slim too?
Do they? Or is it PS4 then? Oh my God. See what I mean though? This is like, hey, I follow this stuff every day. And it confuses me. So I can totally understand consumers who are kind of baffled by this. I mean, I have a friend who follows gaming all the time, and he was going to get an Xbox One S, and he thought that was the Scorpio, which is the next year's one. I mean, you call it Xbox One S, you think, oh, I've read about Scorpio before. That's the one that's souped up, you know, so I'm just going to pick that one up. And I'm like, that's not what this one is.
Yeah, this one does don't wait a year, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to do that. Just got to, you know, good.
No. So that's the thing. Yeah. It's a year off. So they're giving you time there to make your decision. So that's a good thing too. So I think it will be interesting to see, and do people really identify, wow, you know, NBA 2K17, you'd be amazed seeing it versus the 1080p version. I don't know how that's going to come across yet. But
I got to imagine on the right setup, if you get somebody who's got like a big 60 or 70 inch 4K, you know, TV, and you get one of these things, plug it in with HDR, I got to imagine that's pretty awesome.
It's not going to change player faces. I mean, it's going to change.
No, it's not going to change, it's a progression.
What you're already seeing, but it's not going to change what you're seeing, you know?
Right. And I'm cool with that. Some people, you know, and when I say I'm cool with that, it's not, I can't see myself getting one of those 60 or 70 inch, you know, 4K HDR TVs and plugging one of these things into it. And certainly not, you know, anytime soon, you know,
unless you walk by it at an airport, Rich.
And then wow. I also walk by, you know, $20,000 to like build a real basement, you know, where I would have a situation like that happening. So, yeah. But I like this. I just like the, you know, 3 years is a long time to have a single box do stuff. Like, I think we need to be prepared that this is just the way it is. And there'll be a next one of these in 2.5 to 3 years that will crank things up another few notches that might eliminate the OG Xbox One, right?
Yeah.
Or eliminate the launch day PS4. Mm-hmm. Right, to where there's always kind of like two machines that are working, but not two machines like, you know, when Xbox was flipped to 360, like two machines that have like a 2 year sort of game parity match, like what we're going to see here. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense, right? 2 or 3 years is a long time. If you have sort of a common architecture and then you can constantly be adjusting and tweaking like your hardware to where it's not that difficult to make those improvements. I think also that'll help the sports games too, because if they're making less drastic changes, like not making the leaps that we have seen many games struggle with, the console generation leap, that could also be another nice, maybe sort of unintended positive consequence from consoles moving to this sort of quarter step every 2 to 3 years, which it seems like we're on the that's where we're heading.
They just have to be careful they're not splintering off people, because it's one thing to, like what we're getting here is you can play the same game on either console and it's just going to be a slightly different experience. You don't want to end up with, well, now I have three different generations and EA no longer is going to support that first one. So,
well, you know, I mean,
and the second one, they'll just get the legacy editions where we just update the rosters and sell it for a little cheaper. I mean, you don't want to end up with that situation. What you have here right now, I think, is almost ideal in that, yeah, here's you have a choice if you want to upgrade or go with the higher model. But it's not necessary. And developers, yeah, they are going to have to kind of tailor their development towards one and adjust for the other, but it's not going to fundamentally change what the games are on either system.
Right. So because of that, I think, again, this is potential, but I think we all have potential, really upside potential here, because if you don't have to do that 2 or 3 year run up to the next console, you can perhaps dedicate more resources to making, you know, more fundamental changes sooner, or at, you know, at best or at a minimum, you are just able to make more improvements on a year-to-year basis that have a wider appeal, because you aren't splintering your development process between it. And, you know, if they, again, this is all speculation, but if they do another one of these in 2 or 3 years, well, I don't think it's a really much of an right?
That would probably be the next generation.
Yeah, but what does the next generation even mean? I mean,
I see what you're saying. I mean, the definition of what a generation is going to change.
Yeah, right. You know, maybe sort of they eventually get the numbers out of these things. I mean, Xbox One already did, technically, right? It's not a number. So I don't know. I think sort of the more incremental 2 to 3 year upgrades for these things makes it more like a common platform that they would potentially, if they wanted to, have a game that could work optimized for 3 different systems, right? The Xbox One, the Xbox One Scorpio, and the Xbox One Double Scorpio. If the underlying code base does remain the same, it's just you can take advantage of more graphical processor or CPU. I don't know, but it's an interesting potential with a positive upside.
Yeah, so just really an interesting time right now in gaming, just because of the we have new technology, the kind of evolving, not just with the hardware, but with the way you interact with the hardware and with the way the games are featured within the hardware. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening. I'm sure we'll revisit some of these topics coming up, and certainly as we get more information on the Nintendo Switch, we'll cover that. But yeah, it was fun catching up, Rich, and kind of looking at these different things that are going on. And you know, thanks for coming back on the podcast, my man.
My pleasure. I love doing this. It is one of the coolest things ever. Thanks for getting together, man.
Oh yeah. So, yeah, thanks everyone for listening to the Press Roll Podcast. I'll be back next week with another episode. Take care till then, everybody.